When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Have you heard you can listen to your favorite news podcasts ad-free? Good news. With Amazon Music, you have access to the largest catalog of ad-free top podcasts included with your Prime membership. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or visit amazon.com/news-ad-free. That's amazon.com/news-ad-free and catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
It's time for the Rick Smith Show. Here is the voice of the working class, Rick Smith.
And welcome, brothers, sisters, working class heroes. This is the Rick Smith Show. Thanks so much for being here. Today on the big program, lots to get to, lots to talk about. Indictment watch. Evidently, we're ticking down the minutes to the Georgia indictments. And, you know, earlier today, thought they were there. The website claims they were there. Not so much. But the thing that gets me is it's indictment watch. Here we go again. And what I love is I love hearing the right lose their minds. For instance, I think my favorite quote of the day was from the Washington Post, where they wrote, "Inside the D.C. jail, defendants being held in January 6th related cases say they are trading legal theories on how Trump's case could affect their own and joking about which empty cell could house the 45th president of the United States." Now, that's interesting because, you know, those are the most ardent fans. Those are the ones who drank the Kool-Aid. Those are the folks who, you know, bought the T-shirts and wore the hats and all that. And, you know, beat up policemen and destroyed property. And, you know, but, you know, because they were just doing what the president told them to do. I find it interesting that they're joking about which cell he'll be sitting in, which is, I don't know, good for the base's morale. Just kind of throwing it out there. Now, as I said, there was the moment this morning when there was indictment supposedly issued on the website of the Fulton County courthouse. Evidently, the clerk said that the potential indictment of Trump that circulated was fictitious, which means, in my world, it's the one. quite potentially, who knows? But we're ticking down the minutes. Could happen at any time, which is always fun. It's always good to have. And look, if democracy is going to hell in a handbag, if the end of an era is happening, if this wonderful experiment of self-governance is going to not exist anymore, you might as well. What was that guy that ran for governor down in Texas when he was talking about rape? If it's going to happen anyway, you might as well just enjoy it. Yeah, he said it. Now, my mind's not there, but I got to find something in this that is not going to make me lose my mind and being crazy as and angry as I see the folks on the right. Because understand, I'm enjoying the freak out of the folks on the right, because they, I think, maybe just a little bit are seeing that justice is coming potentially. Now again, I was never on the Mueller's coming bandwagon. I'm saying, well, if what I'm hearing is true, I was never on the Trump's going to resign bandwagon. I don't have a lot of faith in others. I have faith in us and we the people. I have the ability for us. And this is why I say Trump has to be running for president in 2024, because we the people have to overwhelmingly send him packing. But, you know, seeing him in an orange jumpsuit, I don't know. It's been interesting to watch. Now, the judge on, was it Friday? Said, don't do any of your normal shenanigans. Don't harass or incite or intimidate anyone. And what does he do? Well, he's testing the limits of those bounds. Because evidently he went after not just the judge, said some really nasty things about her, said that on his Truth Social this morning that Judge Chutkan was very biased and unfair. And he also claimed that she obviously wants him behind bars. And I don't know that any of that is true, but that's like one of those things going, she doesn't like me. Yeah. So there's that. Also, there's the talk of some comments he made about Lieutenant Governor Jeff Duncan, who evidently testified, which he truthed out today, that Jeff, was it Jeff's a bad guy? Jeff shouldn't testify. Oh, here it is. I'm reading reports that failed former Lieutenant Governor of Georgia, Jeff Duncan, will be testifying before the Fulton County grand jury. He shouldn't. I barely know him, but he was right from the beginning of this witch hunt a nasty disaster for those looking into the election fraud that took place in Georgia. So going to be interesting to see if Judge Chutkan's going to do anything about it. Going to hold him responsible for anything. It's interesting that this is where we're going. And you knew this was going to happen. You knew this was coming. The question then becomes, where does Trump go? Where does the Republican Party go if Trump isn't there? Because they're in a major disaster kind of moment without their key guy. Because if you're watching what's going on in Iowa, there ain't much left of the grand old party. And for me, I'm waiting for the rats to completely jump ship and the party to implode as a whole. Because understand, when the indictment came down with the six co-conspirators, I said from the beginning, and look, I'm no expert, but it just seems like the door's open. You could be 1 through 6. Not saying you are. And there are a lot of people who may have fit certain criteria, especially 5 and 6, that are going, hey, I don't want to go to jail. Trump's not going to raise money off the flock to keep me out of prison. Maybe I'm going to flip. And it's going to be interesting to see who the singers are. But for me, as I'm looking at this moment, the country's in an interesting spot. Because if you watch some of the comments coming out of Iowa, because there are a bunch of people going down just to troll Trump supporters at this point, going, you know, what if he murdered somebody? And they go, well, I'd still vote for him. Because this is now no longer about politics. It's not about making people's lives better for some. It's about, you know, they bought the T-shirt. They're wholly invested. This is who they are. This is their identity. And as I've been saying for a long time, these people have been angry for a long time. And the question then becomes, what do we do with them once Trump goes down? Because I'm telling you, in one of these indictments, if not all of them, because it's all right there. Let's go to the phones. Got Steve in Chicago on line one. Steve, how are you today?
Hello.
Steve, what's on your mind?
Yes, I want to make a couple of points, and I too agree with you with regard to Trump. I mean, at some point, something here is going to stick. You know, it doesn't mean that you have to be convicted of every count at the state and federal level, but I mean, some of these things are just by virtue of statistical analysis going to stick. And at which point, you have to ask yourself as a Republican, okay, how many times are we going to hitch our wagon to this guy before we realize that this is ridiculous? I contend that we will have had a decade of Donald Trump, beginning in 2015 and ending when Joe Biden takes office for his second term and in 2025. And that will have given us the decade that was defined by Donald Trump for good and bad, and at which point I think the Republican Party, unless they're absolutely insane, are just going to divest themselves entirely of Trump and Trumpism. And to the extent that they may have to suffer some setbacks, because there are people who will be devoted to him, just like followers of Charles Manson were loyal to him to his death.
It's an interesting choice, but okay.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I mean, there will be people who will go to their graves. They're 40 years old now. There will be 40 years hence when they will go to their graves, you know, asking somebody to say something good about Donald Trump at their eulogy. And, you know, I mean, as you pointed out, this is no longer about politics. It's about culture. It's a kind of quasi-cult following. So, yes, you know, this is where the Republican Party is. And I do this for a living, so I will tell you what Republicans in leadership positions won't say to the masses, because, again, they need that base turnout to vote for their candidate. And that is that, as you pointed out, they're sort of a rudderless ship at this point. They've got a guy who is not likely to be able to win a general election. It's not as if he's done anything in the last 3 years to rehabilitate his image, and now he's facing indictments on the state and federal level. Additionally, you know, his capacity to raise money from his followers has diminished significantly. So unless you believe that Donald Trump is willing to go into his own kick, as it were, to fund this presidential election cycle, you know, then he's going to be at a huge disadvantage compared to Joe Biden going into this. So and beyond that, there's a mainstream Republican Party, you know, that feels sort of neocons, you know, the corporatist Republicans. You know, they like stability. Donald Trump does not bring stability to a society. Stability elevates markets, keeps everything nice and stable, and creates an environment in which they can sell things to people, which is what a lot of Republicans love to do in terms of bottom line. And so, you know, Donald Trump is not their idea of anything that they want in terms of their party going forward. But again, they need that base, so they're torn. You know, again, they're going to have to rip off that Band-Aid either quickly or slowly, but it's got to come off.
Yeah.
And now the question is, what do they do?
And what does it look like afterwards? I mean, because, look, you know, at the end of the day, you're still talking about at least 30, possibly 40% of the electorate is in that camp. And I would say a hard 30% are the dyed-in-the-wool. You know, they'll probably tattooed Trump's name to their backside. That there's no going back.
Oh, absolutely, and to some extent, this is reflected in terms of the larger global society. You and I are about the same age, and we came of age during a time when, you know, the Cold War had come to an end, and we thought that, you know, that this was a new era in human history. That, you know, Western liberal democracy had triumphed, and that it was only a question of when the world would be integrated into a giant, you know, economic system that was reliant on one another, and underpinned by the notion that people that trade with each other don't shoot with each other.
Yep.
I mean, don't shoot at each other.
And boy, were we wrong.
Yeah, we were wrong, because at some point, you know, the nonsense, the superstitious nonsense of nationalism and xenophobia and all of these other things that drive us, it turns out that there are a percentage of people out there who are incapable of leading themselves. They would rather give over their power, the power of their lives, to a strong man, thinking that they know better than they can do for themselves in terms of having to make decisions as voters.
Well, but here's the thing, Stephen, if I could stop here for a second, because this is a failure of the Clinton era, in my view, because in the 80s and in the early 90s, you know, I was back then saying, look, we can't sustain these massive job losses and just say, you know, go get educated, because you're going to lose people. And I think we're in this position largely because the working class of this country got so badly screwed by those ideas that we thought were liberalizing the world and, you know, whip a little trade on them, as George Carlin used to say, and make people our friends by giving up our jobs without taking care of people. I think a lot of this was created by that instability, by that pain and suffering that families had to endure because there wasn't anyone there to help them.
Oh, yeah, no, you're absolutely right in that regard. And it was just this perfect storm, because along came a Donald Trump in the wake of, you know, so a little bit of historical perspective. Donald Trump got his party's nomination at a time when the party was defined by George Bush Jr. and everything that came with that, all the baggage, the two wars, the greatest economic collapse since the Great Depression. So exactly who were you going to tap to vote for that party? You know, because the other neocons running in that election were pretty much George Bush Jr. 2.0. So and that certainly conservatives in America had been disillusioned by that sort of Republicanism, that brand of conservative. But here comes Donald Trump, who's prepared to tell you anything you want to hear. You're grandfather's coal mining job, I'm going to bring it back to you, as if that was ever going to happen. You know, all the nonsense and ridiculous, you know, promises that he made. And I'm just amazed that, you know, none of these things were anything that he could deliver. I've been waiting 8 years for the Donald Trump health care plan, you know, that never materialized. But his supporters just won't concede that, you know what, all of those promises that he made, none of them came true. And you know, and I'm sorry, but, you know, he doesn't get credit for an economy that you inherit from the Obama administration. I mean, you know, so again, this is what happens when you have low information voters.
Yeah.
And let's face it, that's his base. People who aren't terribly well educated, aren't terribly well informed, who live in an echo chamber as far as where they get their information from. I mean, you know, they believe that JFK and Jr. and Donald Trump are going to save America. I mean, you know, how do you communicate with people like that?
You don't. That's why you have to reach out to the other people, get them active, engaged, and the sane and the rational amongst us must step forward. And this has got to be that moment. So let me ask you this. Lastly, you know, because I keep saying I think Trump has to be the nominee. I think he has to lose at the ballot box. I think we, the voters, have to reclaim this wonderful experiment of self-governance. Do you agree with that? Or are you, some people are worried that he could win? And I'm worried he could win. But I think for the good of the country, he has to be defeated.
Oh, absolutely. I don't think he can win. Like I said, I don't think anything about the last few years has made him any more desirable candidate. And quite frankly, I think Joe Biden has done a better job than many people have thought he could.
Much better than I thought he would.
And yeah, exactly. And you know, for many people who don't know it, Republicans have been hoping to run on, you know, some sort of economic policy failings of the Biden administration. Well, guess what? That hasn't happened. It doesn't look like we're going to have a recession. Unemployment is low. Confidence is higher than it's been in 2 years in terms of the economy. So, you know, things are returning to normal post-COVID. So if they were planning to run on that, you know, forget that. That's not the formula to win. And again, even assuming that you had a less than optimal economy, I mean, how is voting for Donald Trump going to make that better? So I agree with you. I think he needs to lose. The process needs to play out. And we need to, as a country, in the same way that we got through COVID and past COVID and put it behind us, we need to put Donald Trump behind us.
I'm right there with you, Steve. I appreciate the call, buddy. Good stuff. Look, he's spot on. We got the smartest callers. I want to hear your thoughts. Email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com, or give us a call, 1-866-416-RICK. 1-866-416-7425. Quick break. Right back.
We are AFGE, the American Federation of Government Employees. We represent 700,000 federal and D.C. government workers who are the vital threads of the fabric of American life. We support our nation's military. We take care of our nation's veterans. We protect our nation's borders. We respond to our nation's crises and natural disasters. We provide services to our nation's seniors. The American Federation of Government Employees. We work for America.
The phone lines are open. Give Rick a call at 1-866-416-RICK. That's 1-866-416-7425. Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So, David Brooks had an interesting comment. He had an interesting column. How America Got Mean was the title of it. And it's one of these things where you go, well, you know, I can tell you how it happened. And this goes back to what we were talking about a minute ago. What happened is you know, we lost, you know, millions of manufacturing jobs. Communities were you know, decimated. And, you know, when we did our Working Class Heroes radio tour, we went through a lot of those places that even all these years later, they're still struggling to recover. And, you know, you take all of that anger and that and understand, you know, 40 years of Limbaugh and Hannity and right-wing blather has created an anger class. The idea is, you know, whatever outrages sells, you know, the equivalent of, you know, television, if it bleeds, it leads. If it outrages, you know, this is what we're going to go with. if it gets people all worked up and angry, because that's what motivates, right? You know, it's much easier to direct people who are afraid or really ticked off than people who are happy and living a good life. So you go to those aggrieved and you give them the red meat. And you say, yeah, them over there. You rile them up, you get them all bunched up in the panties, and you say, go. Go get them. As Trump did on January 6th. The right has understood this for years. And it's always liberals. It's always the LGBT community. It's always the border. And when they need to pull some of that out, like I haven't heard MS-13 thrown around in a while. I'm waiting. I'm waiting for, you know, Fox and all them to go, be afraid. They're coming. But, you know, Brooks had this article on, you know, this idea of, you know, restaurant owners having to throw people out of their restaurants and, you know, nurses, you know, leaving the profession and educators leaving the profession. And the reason this stuck with me today is over the weekend, I happened to go to the local grocery store. And I don't do, full disclosure, I don't do much shopping. I'm not a big fan of stores. I'm not a big fan of shopping. It's not my thing. I'm grateful to my wife that there's food in the house because she deals with all of that. Because I don't put up with nonsense easily. And I'm in the checkout line. I'm waiting, and there's a woman behind me who's just losing her mind that there, you know, at 10 o'clock on a Saturday night, there's only one checkout person. I'm shocked there's even one, because they've got all these automated things, and I refuse to do that. So there's the one, and I waited a couple of minutes, and this woman is just losing her mind behind me, literally losing her mind. And I started talking to the cashier, and I'm going, how do you deal with this? You know, how do you deal with the kind of treatment that you get from these horrible customers? And she then told me about, you know, the place has a high turnover rate. You know, they're churning through people constantly because nobody wants to work in that environment. The wages are terrible to begin with. I mean, it's, you know, it's hard to get people in when you're talking about low wages to start. But then to have to put up with, all of the craziness of people. It's one of those things where you just go, you know, I don't think I want to deal with people. I don't think I want to do this. And this is what this person was telling me and explaining some of the things that have gone on. And again, you go through the last 40 years and you figure out, you know, all along the way, what is the right-wing message been? You know, tear down institutions, attack, especially individuals. And we've, as a society, have lost respect for anyone, let alone ourselves. And it's one of those things where, you know, I've often said, there's part of me that blames social media, because social media allows us to be the worst version of ourselves, you know, out in cyberspace. Now, sadly, we've just turned into the worst versions of ourselves. This idea of distrust and disdain of not just institutions, but each other. This is what the Trump era has finished off. We were on this path. We were heading in this direction. It was just Trump who kicked the door off the hinges and said, absolutely go. Go be as horrible to each other as you want, because that's good for them. As long as we're at the supermarket yelling at each other, and then the woman yelling at the cashier, who has absolutely no control how many of her there are in that facility. It's crazy. And you know what happens is we end up eating each other. They end up not being able to get anybody. So, hey, we're going to have to automate because nobody wants to work here. It's a horrible snowball that I got to go, you know, the wealth class of this country is just sitting smiling at us over, because we're literally eating each other. This Trump indictment, which, oh, by the way, just came down in Georgia. I haven't looked at it yet, but evidently there is an indictment that has been brought down, and the grand jury has returned an indictment in the Trump case. So that's going to be, we'll figure out what that is. But, and I guess there are multiple charges for several defendants, including Trump and several close allies. So that's going to be, well, I guess what we're going to be talking about the whole rest of the week, unfortunately. But for me, the idea that we just can't seem to be nice to each other is really freaking crazy. And it's working to the benefit of the wealth class, because they're going to automate, they're going to privatize, they're going to do all this horrible stuff, and we will have asked for it. Want to hear your thoughts? Email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So, Arkansas has joined the Florida gang. Evidently, the Arkansas Department of Education has decided that no more AP African American Studies courses. And again, this is another one of those moments where you go, and who's behind all this? How much big money is pushing this? But it's been reported, and unlike with every other AP class on offer, the state would not cover the $90 cost at the end of the year for the test of giving the students the opportunity to qualify for college credit. This, again, is another one of these weird moments where if you're a teacher, you know, what do you teach in this day and age? You know, as we're now seeing all of this stuff coming out of Florida, which, you know, is part of a national game plan to destroy public education. It's not even really about the curriculum. It's about destroying and privatizing and profitizing public education. But here to share some thoughts, someone who knows much, much more about this than I do. I've asked my good friend Mark Weber to come and share some thoughts. He's a special analyst for education policy with the New Jersey Policy Perspective. He's also a lecturer at Rutgers University on education policy, music teacher, and one of the greatest bloggers out there. You can see his stuff at jerseyjazzman.blogspot.com. Mark, thanks for taking time for us.
Thanks for having me, Rick. I was just saying it's been a while and I love coming on. So it's always a treat. Thank you for having me.
Well, what better time when public education is being under attack from every direction and you've got crazy people wanting to make policy and you've got a lunatic talk radio host who is now going to be in charge of history for educational videos in Florida and who knows where else. What could possibly be the reason that I reached out to you?
What could be a better time? Maybe what could be a worse time, right? When you're a teacher or when you've got kids, you think the summer, that's downtime, right? That's not when anything happens at school. But the last month has just been crazy town. There's just one ridiculous thing after another, and sometimes it's hard to keep them straight. You were talking in the previous segment about people who work in retail and how like it's hard to get people to do that job anyway because it's a tough job, and then you keep piling things on top of people and you wonder how much more they can take. And I was thinking about that with this thing in Arkansas. So AP I think most of your listeners know, but just in case, the advanced placement courses are college level courses that are offered to high school students. And they're a great deal because you can get actual college credit in high school, not have to pay college tuition for it. And a lot of times it sets you up to be admitted into a more competitive school if you have those credits. Now, there are some things we can argue with about whether AP is exactly the best way to do this, and people disagree on these things. But in general, you know, there are a lot of positives to it. What happened in Arkansas, apparently, is that it didn't even go out as an announcement from the governor's office or from the Department of Education. Somebody signed on to a registration system and all of a sudden a message came up, no, this is no longer going to be accepted for high school credit. And think about all the teachers this summer who did all the work to prepare for this course, a college level course, and all the kids who were planning on having this credit that they could put to their graduation, and it just gets swept away by a bureaucrat's push of a button like that.
Yeah.
It's that idea again of just piling on to regular people who are just trying to do the right thing. want to do something admirable, take a college course, teach a college course, but because of the political ambitions of somebody like a Sarah Huckabee Sanders, now we have this disaster in Arkansas. It's really, you know, the other thing too is that they're canceling AP African American Studies. They're not canceling AP European Studies.
Yeah.
Yeah. So European history, which, you know, we know who is behind European history, right? That's fine. You can study that. But when it comes to people who actually live in this country, who built this country, who were the ones whose toil and whose degradation was the economic base that this country was built on. No, we can't talk about that because that's politically inexpedient for,
well,
for
the government. No, but this is a good divisive tool is what it is. Because it does two things. One, it divides people in the general populace. It divides parents because, you know, why do I want my kids, you know, to have to feel bad about this horrible stuff? And then more importantly, it gets people who are, you know, who are fed up, like the cashier at the grocery store going, I'm tired of dealing with craziness. I'll go do something else. It's the same thing with teachers. I don't know if you've seen it, but there's a teacher shortage going on. And I thought it was a couple hundred thousand teachers nationwide that were short because people are just leaving.
I think it was in South Dakota, like in the last week or two. I'm sorry, I apologize. I don't remember. I think it was South Dakota. Teacher of the year just decided, I'm done. I'm done. And why was that? She was getting criticized for Facebook posts that on her own account that were supportive of LGBTQ folks. Like, and apparently she was getting hassled and was getting all kinds of extra scrutiny of her work. And that is the sort of thing where it's like, hey, wait a second, you know, you're not paying me that much to begin with. You've put all this bureaucracy on top of me, on top of the job, where really what I want to do is teach. And now you add this to it. Why would anybody stay? You used the word divide though earlier, and I've been thinking about this. You know, I'm a teacher, so I always think in mnemonic devices, right? What's going on? Divide is definitely one thing, but it's really three: divide, defund, destroy.
Right.
So the divide is over things like curriculum. That's the whole point of school choice, is that we're all going to go to our separate corners. We can't have one unifying experience of public school to bring us all together. We've just apparently given up on the American experiment, and everybody's going to go off and
that whole melting pot thing doesn't work anymore.
Right. But that is built on this chronic defunding of the public schools, which has been taking place. I think it's really important to understand this. The places where quote unquote school choice has been rising up have been these places where schools have been chronically defunded. Pennsylvania, great example. I mean, the legislature, just the last few weeks, the Republicans in the legislature came out and said, we have a school funding decision in Pennsylvania. The Pennsylvania system has been found unconstitutional, right? And this was clear and unequivocal.
Right.
Now, how are we going to do that? And what do the Republicans say? More school choice. So it's defunding and dividing, and that's what leads to destroying.
No, as I say, you know, it's all about dividing us and then privatizing. You've gone a little bit further of explanation, but it's all the same. I mean, it's all about divide and conquer and then privatize and profitize.
Right. And you know, again, the upshot of this is what, you know, one of the biggest things that we're seeing right now is this fleeing from the teaching profession. You know, maybe I was foolish, but I actually was having some hope coming out of COVID, because there was a renewed sense that the schools were important, teachers were important. There was a great fear that we were going to have a huge exodus out of the profession immediately following COVID. And while we had some attrition, it wasn't as big as we kind of feared. What's happened, unfortunately, though, is that the pipeline going in is it's slowly being turned off. And now we're getting it down to a dribble. We're seeing fewer and fewer people who are going into the profession. And part of that, you know, what happened again, what a crazy couple of weeks we've had. So the defunding of West Virginia University, I don't know how many of your listeners have been following this, but, you know, this is a school that is being basically stripped for parts at this point. And we're talking, there have been reports out about humanities being cut and programs in the sciences being cut. What's the one thing they're looking at? Education. Defunding the education administration programs and special ed programs. West Virginia University, I double checked the data, is the biggest provider of teacher training in the state. Well, what happens when your flagship university shuts down teaching teachers? You put up yet another barrier toward people entering the profession.
See, this is where I can stop you here. This is where I disagree with you. Because the conservative ideology is we don't need those credentials. We don't need you to go to those schools. What we need are we need theocrats to go in and teach the only book that really matters. I've got friends who have explained to me what the future of education is going to be. And it's not your government schools, Mark. It's not those government schools. It's going to be good, God-fearing Christian schools. We're going to teach kids what they need to know out of the good book. That's the mentality. So they don't care about education. They don't care about credentials. They don't care about any of that. They care about destroying the government schools.
There's one place where they do care about it, Rick, and that's for their own kids. A lot of these people, you know, they will defund somebody else's school, but they will pay a pretty penny for their kid to get the sort of education that they think is important. So then the argument that comes back from that is, well, you want to deny that to all kids. Let's have all kids have that private school education. Okay, are you willing to pay, what is it now at the Hill School where the Trump boys went? About $45,000 a year if you're you're not even living on the campus? Yeah. Are we willing to pay that much?
In fact, I had a state senator.
And the answer, of course, is not.
I had a state senator on, you know, several years back, who's now been outed, you know, out of office, had a sex scandal go on. But he was the guy who introduced one of the first voucher bills here in Pennsylvania. And I had asked him if his voucher bill, if I got this wonderful golden ticket, if I could send my kids to the Abington Friends School in Philadelphia, which I know charges, I think, like 45, 50 grand a year for kindergarten. And he told me, absolutely. You're going to get that. And his own bill didn't say that. His own bill said I would get what my school district paid and I would have to fork up the rest of it. But he didn't even know that. But they've sold this to people that, yeah, you're going to be okay because you're going to get this golden ticket. And this golden ticket is going to get you into those exclusive places like you just said, when the reality is that's not what it's about at all.
Yeah. You and I've talked about this before. There was education philosophy writer Martin Hollis wrote a paper years ago about education as a positional good. And it was the idea that my kids' education is enhanced by making their education better, but it's also enhanced by making your education worse. So if other kids aren't getting good education, but mine is, that is a net plus for me in this kind of way of thinking of positional goods. And it's indicative of what you were talking about in the previous segment about us being mean to each other, us not caring about each other, us not having civic values. You know, so many of our American civic values are tied up in the idea of free public schools available to everyone, teaching certain common core values. And it's disheartening to me to see how quickly some people want to throw that away. Having said that, poll after poll after poll after poll, time and time again, you will find people say that they are concerned about the state of education in America, but they will also say they love their own local school. They love their own kids' teacher. They love their own kids' principal. This it's one of the great constants polling that we see over and over again. People value being able to have their kid attend a public school that's democratically run, where everybody gets a say in a democratic process, where it's open, where it's transparent, and where it's free, and everybody who lives within the borders is given an education. Yeah. It's sad to think about how quickly we want to throw that away for the promise of results that have been shown time and time again. I mean, every major study of major voucher programs has shown that they have worse outcomes. And don't believe the cherry pick nonsense that tells you otherwise. That's just, it's not true. But not only that, the idea that we would give up so easily that we can share some common values of tolerance, of decency, of patriotism, we should be able to have that common
I agree with you.
Place where we all sit. And it's, again, it's, to me, it's sad and it frankly unpatriotic to give up on that so easily.
So here's where I want to finish up with this, because Florida is now going to start using these Prager University, Prager Kids videos that are the most generous I can be is a rewrite of history. I've been calling them Schoolhouse Rock for Nazis, because that's basically what they are. I'm curious your thoughts.
I think you have to be our age to get that joke, Rick.
yeah, okay.
I'm not sure people in their 20s.
When I was a kid, back in the old days, we used to have cartoons.
Right.
And that's anyway. What these are. These are basically cartoons of rewritten history, basically saying, slavery wasn't a bad thing. It was, killing, instead of taking slaves, what would you rather have us do? Just kill them instead? I mean, there's a lot of craziness in these videos, Mark.
Yeah, I'm aware of some of the other things that Prager's done, and it's nonsense. But I didn't get until this past week to see some of the ones that they're actually going to allow to be used in Florida schools. And there was one with Frederick Douglass, and it was cartoon Frederick Douglass talking with two little kids who happen to be white. Surprise, surprise, about how he was working within the system. And he was trying to change the system.
And the Constitution's a great document.
Right. Now, what I thought was the whole point of this is to stand up because there's a fear of indoctrination, except you couldn't find a better example of indoctrination than that. If you really cared about learning about Frederick Douglass, why wouldn't you use his own words? Why wouldn't, for example, you have a cartoon of Frederick Douglass giving his famous 4th of July speech, where he says, what is, what are Black Americans supposed to think about when the 4th of July is happening, right? And he talks about the all of the deficiencies in the country, all the broken promises and so on. Why not have that? And the reason why is this is indoctrination. This is the hypocrisy of this movement, that the very thing you say you're standing up against, the very thing that you say you want to protect children for, you are engaging in the most egregious and the most historically unrepresented way possible. You're not giving kids Frederick Douglass's own words and letting them figure out for themselves what it means. You are literally rewriting what he says and then trying to sell it as some historical truth when in fact it's absolutely not. But again, what you said about homeschooling is absolutely correct. Hey, can I say one thing too, real quick? We lost the last couple of weeks a great champion of public education. Darcy Simorusti was the comms director at the Network for Public Education. She was a blogger here in New Jersey. She was known as Mother Crusader. She worked tirelessly on behalf of public schools. She had a long battle with cancer, and I already miss her. We got to keep this fight going for Darcy. We got to keep this fight going for her family. We got to keep this fight going for everybody like her who cherished public schools, cherished what they did for her family. So, you know, Darcy, all of our love to you and your family.
So what can people do? I mean, you know, the reality is you're right. You know, when I talk to people, you know, they believe there's so much going on out there that they don't see. They've been sold that, you know, all of this indoctrination and grooming is happening, that there are drag shows in every classroom and every library in the country is full of books trying to turn their children one way or another. And that, you know, that's out there. Now, their school's okay, because as you've pointed out, their teacher's okay, but we got to protect all those others. What right. do we do? I mean, because the right is organized, and there's a lot of money behind this. You know, the Jeffrey Yazes of the world and the big funders who want to destroy, you know, the Betsy DeVosses who want to destroy public education. What do people do?
So there was a great story out of Granbury, Texas, tiny little district, I get it in Texas, which, of course, is Greg Abbott's Texas. And, you know, as egregious as Florida in terms of destroying schools, rural Texas schools in particular are taking a huge hit. And a school board member, conservative, radically right wing, got herself onto the board, sneaks into the high school and turns off the lights in the library, thinking she's not going to get caught. She's there with her phone and taking pictures of books, trying to find smut. And the assistant principal walks by and sees this flashing light going. This is like early in the morning, I guess. Sees this flashing light in the library when it's dark. And he goes over, what's going on? And he finds this person, and there's a whole thing. And the superintendent, apparently, and I think the principal too, stand up to this school board member. And apparently the community does too. These people have gone too far. And it's become, even if you are adamantly on the political right, even to you, you know, these people are going too far. They're making life impossible for your kids' teachers. They're making it impossible for your principals. They are ruining the schools. They are not protecting the investment that we're making in the schools. What we need are more teachers, administrators, parents, concerned citizens standing up to these people and saying, that's enough. That's enough. We're not putting up with this anymore. You know, again, there was a parent who went viral in Houston this week, standing up to Mike Miles, the state-appointed superintendent, who decided to turn all the libraries into discipline center.
And detention centers, yeah.
And this mom, she's one mom, but she stood up and she said, that's it. Enough's enough. I'm not putting up with that anymore. It's going to take that. But people are out there. They care about their schools. They love their schools. If we stay organized, if we stay engaged, we're going to ride this out because this is not what people want.
Yeah.
And at the end of the day, that's what, at the end of the day, politicians are going to go along with what people want. At least
I hope you're right.
That is my
hope. I'm concerned about the future for kids in this country. If they're watching their parents do the kind of things that you just said, breaking into libraries, the kind of antics that I see at school board meetings of people making threats. I mean, these are the role models that these kids are going to grow up to emulate. And this idea that we don't respect each other. And, you know, like I said, you know, Brooks piece about, you know, how'd we get so mean? This is a huge part of this.
Well, you know, my favorite political philosopher of the 20th century was George Carlin.
Yes.
And George Carlin, I think, nailed it. He said, what the owners of this country do not want is a well-educated populace, a populace
capable of critical thought.
Well-informed and capable of critical thinking. That's right. It's, and so that's the other thing you got to remember about all of this. Is it about these scam artists making money off of school vouchers and charter school real estate deals? Sure, a part of it's about that. Is part of it about deunionization? Sure, part of it is about that. But really the core of it is about having a compliant, poorly educated population. So you know what the best thing I think maybe you could do? to stand up against this, pick up a good book and read it. You know, get your news from good sources. Show your kids that's the responsibility that you have for being a member of a democratic society. Educate yourself. And if we do that, then, you know, we the people should be able to withstand. I hope we'll be able to withstand this storm.
Then there might be hope. That at least that's my belief. I'm with you, Mark. It's interesting times. I hope you'll come back and share some thoughts with us. Absolutely. Down the road as this is going to continue. So most certainly, I want to have you back. But I appreciate the time.
At the time always flies, Rick. So anytime, I appreciate it. Thank you.
There you go. Good stuff, Mark Weber. He is a special analyst for education policy with the New Jersey Policy Perspective. Also a lecturer at Rutgers and a music teacher there in New Jersey. You can check out his work over at jerseyjasmine.blogspot.com. We'll get links out on social media so you can take a look at his incredible work. Highly, highly suggested. Been doing this a lot of years. I want to hear your thoughts. Email me, rick@therickSmithShow.com. Quick break. Right back. Stick around.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So the more time passes by, the more we're finding out. I guess 10 indictments are going to be handed down. Going to have to wait a couple hours, though, to find out exactly what they are. But there will be indictments. There are indictments. There will be charges and, you know, more legal headaches. Now, again, Trump said he just needed one more indictment for his reelection campaign. Well, congratulations, Donnie. You got it. Anyway, here to share some thoughts on, I'm sure you've been watching what's going on in Hawaii, the incredible fires, some other good news on the environmental front. That's why I've asked Brad Friedman to come talk with us. Brad's the guy you hear just right before at the top of the hour, does those wonderful green news reports. He's also the publisher of the Brad Blog. You can check that out at bradblog.com and the host of the Daily Bradcast, nationally syndicated on the Pacifica Radio Network. Brad, thanks for taking time for us.
Hey, how are you, Rick? Good to see you, my friend.
Well, good. I mean, indictments are coming down. I guess 10 of them, right?
10 of them are coming down, or have come down, have already been handed up and signed by the judge. And the clerk says we've got to wait about 3 hours, in a worst-case scenario, 3 hours before they go public. And apparently they're going to be online, all of them. For all of the 10 people who have been indicted, we don't know who those people are, but I'm guessing I can pick at least one of them.
Yeah, I'm thinking I got a list of them. I got the former guy, and then Rudy and Sidney Powell. I mean, there's a whole slew of these folks that will be. Yeah. I'm hoping Lindsey Graham. I'm praying Lindsey Graham.
I hear you. I don't know if it might have been, had there been more. I'm actually kind of surprised it's only 10. So, I she doesn't have the same sort of restrictions that Jack Smith does, who's, you know, wants to get this case in and done before the election. She can take forever if she wants. Her case is not going to, he can't do a self-pardon even if he becomes president somehow again. So, only 10, we'll see. Will there be more tomorrow as well?
Yeah, but, you know, all we hear about, you know, the conspiracy about how, you know, Joe Biden rigged the election from his basement, evidently learned coding, and now the more we find out about what was actually going on, a lot of shenanigans on the right. And it's one of those things, I had someone tell me that the reason that they were willing to, a couple of people were willing to vote twice here in Pennsylvania is because they thought that their first vote wasn't going to be counted. So they had to make sure. So they believed that they were being cheated so that they then cheated so that they thought, and this doesn't make a lot of sense, but they thought that they were going to counteract the cheating.
It makes perfect sense. Every allegation is a confession with these folks. They know they did it, so they think everybody else did it, which is why we were covering today on the broadcast again, the Coffee County, Georgia voting system breach, where these right wingers went in beginning on January 7, 2021, into this little rural town in Georgia, and open up the voting systems, make copies of the sensitive software, hardware and software. And it was, it's only now being noticed by many in the mainstream media. We've been trying to let folks know about this for a year because these systems are used all over the country. They're used over the entire state of Georgia. And these folks now have access to them. They are highly vulnerable systems, highly unverifiable systems. And if you have access to these systems, essentially you have the keys to the kingdom. Yeah. Well, they now have those keys in Georgia, which may be part of the indictment, in Michigan, in Nevada, in Colorado, in Pennsylvania, where this same multi-state conspiracy was hatched at the Oval Office with Donald Trump and Sidney Powell and Rudy Giuliani on December 18, 2020. And it's still playing out, and not enough is being done to stop it. These folks still have this hardware and software, and, well, 2024 is barreling down at us right now.
Yeah, isn't this one of those places, though, Brad, and you're the voting expert here, where if these machines are so easily manipulated, if having the keys to the kingdom is possible, should we have these machines?
No, we should not, especially the ones that they use in Georgia and a lot of places in Pennsylvania that are touchscreen systems that print out a computer-marked paper ballot. We need hand-marked paper ballot in every polling place in the nation. And right now, Georgia is one of the worst in the nation, forces all of its voters to vote on these terrible, unverifiable touchscreen systems. But the same thing is true in I believe Philadelphia, for example, is still forcing people to vote on these touchscreens, the polling place.
I vote on one.
Somewhere like that. What's that?
I vote on one.
Yeah, and you shouldn't. It's better to vote on election day if you can, but on election day, if you're forced to vote on a touchscreen system, please vote by mail if you can, if you're allowed wherever you live to vote by mail so you get a hand-marked paper ballot.
Again, as you said, every allegation's an indictment of because they're told us there's all this voter fraud out there. There's all this stuff going on, Brad. But yet the more we dig into this, the more the conspiracy grows. And I don't like to generally be part of conspiracy theories, but there seems to be a lot of stuff going on here with the fake electors, this machine stuff. I mean, just seems like a lot.
Yeah, well, there's no conspiracy necessary. In this case, there actually was a conspiracy that was, they were originally talking about seizing all the voting machines around the country. This was their sort of backup plan. Instead of seizing all the voting machines, we'll get voluntary access by some of our friendly election officials in several states, and we'll go in there and we'll look at the systems and somehow we'll be able to prove fraud. They were never able to prove fraud, but what they have been able to get access to is what they could use next year if they want to defraud the system themselves. It doesn't mean they will, but the fact that we use systems that allow themselves to be manipulated so easily and without likelihood of detection is just insane. We should know better by now. Yeah. And by the way, in places like Georgia, where you've got guys like Brad Raffensperger, the Secretary of State, who's everybody's hero because he didn't allow Trump to steal the 2020 election, he's the dude who's been helping to cover up the breach of the voting systems in Coffee County because this is his system. He chose them. They cost about $150 million, and he can't admit that he was wrong in going with another touchscreen system instead of paper ballots.
Not to mention the hundreds of thousands of people he purged off the voting rolls, but we won't talk about that. Yeah. No, it's going to be interesting to see where Fannie Willis goes with this and when the indictments finally are revealed and we find out. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show. We're here with Brad Friedman. He's the publisher of The Brad Blog. You can find that over at bradblog.com. Also the host of The Daily Bradcast, syndicated nationally by Pacifica Radio. But I gotta move over to what's going on in Hawaii because I got to tell you, you know, the videos that I've seen are just terrible. But I was looking at a Media Matters report that said, out of all the stories that were going on, and they've over a couple of day period, said there were 209 segments, but only 4% of them bothered to mention anything about climate or climate change. It was just all about the, if it bleeds, it leads. If it's horrible, that's what we see. But none of the possible reasons why or any of this. I'm curious your thoughts on what's going on there.
You know, sometimes I have to check the calendar. It's 2023, and yet we're still getting these reports. Thank God for Media Matters, who, you know, bothers to check this stuff. The fact that mainstream outlets are still not reporting, you know, as if it's, you know, they're partying like it's 1999 or something, like you can't mention climate change. When the people get it, you know, 2/3 of the American people in recent polling want more to be done about the climate. I guess the problem is that the people that advertise on CNN and Fox and MSNBC, et cetera, MSNBC is better at it for sure. But I guess, you know, those are fossil fuel companies. They don't want to tick them off, I guess. Otherwise, I cannot understand why it is so difficult for these folks to connect the climate change dots after all of these years. I mean, you know, yeah, Hawaii, and there are several problems in Hawaii, and there are several problems, by the way, in most of these cases. It is not all climate change, but climate change makes all of it worse. You know, you also have problems where the big ag, the sugar industry up and left Hawaii, and, you know, basically, just the way coal and oil companies do, they get up and they leave, and they leave it to the taxpayers to clean up. So they didn't restore the ground where they grow the farms for the sugar plantations, and they just let everything go brown. And we've spoken to people in Maui, and they said, yeah, over the years, it's gotten drier and drier and browner, and then boom, something like these fires happen, and disaster. And on that same day, by the way, you got guys like Tim Scott on the Republican side who are out there as Americans are dying by the scores in Hawaii, is out there saying, well, climate change is not a real threat. The real threat is our border emergency. Yeah. Never mind the climate emergency. The border emergency is happening now. It's an existential threat. I would argue that, yeah, the climate emergency is an existential threat, especially to those nearly 100 people now that we know have been killed in on Maui.
Yeah, I mean, the thing that caught my attention is I was reading the one story. It said the fire moved at a mile a minute. You barely didn't have a chance to run. I mean, you basically just jump into the ocean is what a lot of people did. And I'm going a mile a minute. How dry and how much was laying around?
Yeah, you know, we see one story after another just in this summer alone, record heat across the globe, record storms up in the Northeast where you are, and farther to the north, record heat down in Florida, water off the south coast of Florida.
100 degrees.
And we have presidential candidates for president of the United States, although in Tim Scott's case, I should say candidates for vice president of the United States, but that they are still in 2023 pretending that climate change is not an issue. They know that it is, and they are pretending that our border is an emergency, and they know that it's not.
Well, it's all about division. It's all about divide and conquer. But fortunately, and I want to get your thoughts on this ruling in Montana, where a number of young people have filed suit against the state because the state has look, I think Pennsylvania has similar language in its constitution to say that, look, you've got the right to a healthy environment, to a clean environment, and the judge said this is kind of a huge deal, no?
Yeah. Oh, it's a really huge deal. The judge basically said that the new laws that were passed in Montana that basically says that the fossil fuel industry can ignore climate concerns and emissions and so forth, that is unconstitutional under the state constitution in Montana, which guarantees a livable environment. And so these young kids, young plaintiffs from ages, I think, 5 to 22, sued and said these laws that allow us to ignore environmental regulations are unconstitutional. And They finally won. Now, we've seen other cases like this around the country that have not moved all the way forward to trial, but there are lawsuits, challenges in, I believe, all 50 states and, of course, countries around the world where young people are saying, look, you have the mandate in your constitution, in your laws, to take care of the environment, to make sure that we can live a prosperous, healthy life. And this finding by this judge in Montana, we'll see if it holds up. But if this finding does, I know that a lot of judges in a lot of these other cases around the country and the world are looking at this and may begin to think differently about this and the damage that these companies have done.
This could be a precedent setting case. Yep. It could be. I personally, being jaded, and I know you're much more optimistic than I am, but being jaded.
Am I?
Trust me, you're more optimistic than I am. I don't see this holding up because the moneyed interests are far too powerful. But this is a message for, should be a message for voters and for people, you know, to move forward on, even if the courts aren't going to hold this up.
Yeah, and I don't know if they're going to hold it up either, you know. So believe me, I got to be damn near as jaded as you. That said, you know, the ruling was based in the Constitution. And so for those right wingers out there who claim to be originalist textualists, go by the words of the Constitution. Well, the Constitution is pretty clear in Montana.
Yeah.
And that was the ruling that was made by, you know, this is not like a bunch of lefty hippies running the courts in Montana. We'll see if it holds up on appeal. We'll see what John Roberts and that corrupted bunch decide to do. But so far, so good. So take your victories. Take a victory for the day. We can go back to being jaded tomorrow.
No, no, you take a win. And this is definitely a win. But Brad, I appreciate the time. As always, good talking with you. The website, bradblog.com, where you can find all of the Bradcast, all of the green news, all of the great stuff he does. Also, you can take a look at the blog itself, bradblog.com, the website. Brad, thanks so much, man.
Thanks, man. Have a happy indictment night.
There you go. Thanks so much. Want to hear your thoughts? Email me, rick@therickssmithshow.com. Right back with your thoughts. Stick around. You listen to The Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Come to talk.
We are AFGE, the American Federation of Government Employees. We represent 700,000 federal and D.C. government workers who are the vital threads of the fabric of American life. We support our nation's military. We take care of our nation's veterans. We protect our nation's borders. We respond to our nation's crises and natural disasters. We provide services to our nation's seniors, the American Federation of Government Employees. We work for America.
The phone lines are open. Give Rick a call at 1-866-416-RICK. That's 1-866-416-7425. Welcome back to The Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
Sure, like you, I'm eagerly waiting for what the indictment is going to look like, and I guess it's going to be a late night. But we'll see. We'll see who, what, where. I have some hopes. You know, I'm hoping Lindsey Graham's involved in this. I really hope. But here's some fun and entertainment. And what is it about Republicans in my state of Pennsylvania running for Senate and living in blue states? What is that all about? Evidently, Dave McCormick is gearing up to run for Senate here in Pennsylvania. Only problem is he lives in Connecticut. Kind of like when Dr. Quack, Mehmet Oz, you know, ran from New Jersey. It's one of those things you go, you know, what is it about, you know, people who live in blue states who then want to run in Pennsylvania, which is, you know, a battleground state. Blue most of the time, gets crazy every once in a while. But what is it? Is it, you know, is it that they're trying, they don't want to live in the places that they're destroying? I mean, could it be that? Could that be a part of it? And now, look, you know, they're not the only one. Understand, you know, when Rick Santorum was senator here, he lived in Virginia. You've got, you know, Tommy Tuberville, who lives in Florida. You got Sarah Huckabee, I guess, is looking to buy a house in Northern Virginia. You know, there's all kinds of, you know, Josh Hawley evidently lives in Northern Virginia. I guess uses his sister's address, not even his own. But, you know, hey, never mind. It is what it is. But here's the, again, I go back to, you know, what is it about these people who want to leave their blue states to come run here? What is that? And why would you vote for that? That's the part that blows my mind. Why would you vote for that? I do not know. Let's quick go to the phones. Got Alice on line one. Alice, what's on your mind?
Well, what I want to say is, wouldn't you think, and I mean, you know, it might be something new, that if you represent a state, that perhaps you should live in that state?
But you remember Rick Santorum, don't you?
Yeah.
You remember Rick Santorum, yeah. Right? He ran against Harris Wofford back in the day, claiming the exact same thing, only he was doing what he said he wasn't doing.
It's insane. I mean, how do you I can't talk tonight. How do you successfully portray everything that your constituents in that state have going on or need or what have you if you don't live there?
Yeah.
It makes no sense.
Because you don't care.
Yeah, I don't think they do either.
As
a side note, I've been keeping up on things on WAPO, and there's 10 indictments that have been, 10 people that have been indicted along with Trump.
Yeah.
So they didn't release any names yet.
All right, good. I'm looking forward to it. Thanks, Alice.
On that either, because, you know, for some reason, you can't seem to kill evil. I mean, he's got more lives than a cat. But have a good evening, Rick.
There you go. Thanks, Alice. Appreciate it. Let's go to Rick in Pennsylvania on line two. Rick, how are you, buddy?
Hey, Rick. How's it going?
Good.
Yeah, I haven't heard of that name Rick Santorum in quite some time. I was a truck driver, and he propositioned me in a truck stop bathroom one time. And
No, I think you got that wrong. It was Lusty Larry Craig, and that was a Minneapolis airport. And if you're gonna go with the joke, at least get to the punchline. Jeez, I was gonna give you the punchline. I was, and then you cheated us out of that punchline. And it's not like Rick Santorum doesn't have enough LGBTQ, attached to the Santorum name. You should probably look up what Santorum is in slang terms. I'm not telling you, but you can look that up for yourself there, Rick. Hey, again, appreciate the thought. In fact, I didn't even get to the button to drop him fast enough. I think I'm getting slow. I'm getting slow on the uptake. But, you know, here's the thing. And this is where, again, I come back to, you look at these guys running for Senate, like Oz and like McCormick is going to. They live in their posh areas. They live in their gated communities. They don't know what average everyday working people go for. You know, I keep going back to the Crew Today? With Oz, which is just, you know, just a vegetable platter. He just didn't connect. And this is where I keep saying working people need to run for these offices. But the problem is it's the money. And when you see this scenario keep going on, because we're so divided and pitted against each other, it's easy for them. This is why I keep saying, at some point, we got to put down the outrage candy. Got to get away from... It blows my mind that people are going to side with a billionaire who flies on a private jet and is begging you for money for a legal defense. It just blows my mind that a working person would reach into their pocket and spend the $20 for a T-shirt that they could easily give out. And I was watching a video of Trump throwing out hats. It was like a cult. It was like a cult rally. We can do better. I mean, this is the problem that I have in this space that we're in. We can do better than any of these people, because how much of what is actually being addressed in average, everyday working people's lives? I give Biden credit. He is turning the ship But I would argue, and I have people who argue, well, it's not fast enough. No, it's not. It's never going to be fast enough when you've got a Senate that is divided. You know, that place where good ideas go to die. Until we as a society come back to somewhere between the curbs and say we want better for ourselves and our kids, we're going to continue these idiotic fights. And of course, you know, the occasional, I saw Rick Santorum petition me. Was it the girls' bathroom? Maybe. Maybe. I want to hear your thoughts, though. Email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. Also, if you miss any portion of the program, grab the podcast wherever you get your favorite podcast.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So, on the day when 10 indictments are coming down in Georgia, Republicans have offered articles of impeachment against President Biden. Greg Staub, I guess his name is, Republican from Florida. He is now the first member of the Republican Party to jumpstart the process, according to the Washington Examiner. Evidently, the articles of impeachment are saying that the president was complicit with his son Hunter and the allegation of crimes there, and that he was the mastermind of the cover-up. Yeah. So while he was asleep, rigging the elections, and adult and Sleepy Joe and all that, he was doing all of this nefarious stuff. He's a criminal mastermind. Anyway, here's some thoughts on, the big indictments, what we know thus far. Also, hey, think this is going to work? I've asked our good friend, former Ohio congressman and political analyst Bob Ney to come share some thoughts. Bob, what do you think?
Well, thank you, Rick. Well, I mean, I think we all knew Georgia was coming, you know?
Yep.
I mean, I really don't think I'd surprise. The RICO Act, it looks, like that was also the medium that they were using. Of course, RICO Act was formulated originally to get the mafia, and then the RICO Act, once a law is passed and something's created, you can use it for other things. But it was created for the mafia. Then it became a creation. I think, what, do you have to have three people, or is it two or more?
I thought it was three people for a conspiracy.
Yeah. And then it becomes basically organized crime. So they were looking at their RICO statutes for this. But I thought, that the indictments would be for sure coming from Georgia.
Yeah, and the question for me is it not about Trump, it's about everybody else. Unlike Jack Smith, who has these six unnamed conspirators, and I said from the beginning, I thought those are going to be the people that he wants to to rat out. I'm understanding they're going to name who those 10 are going to be.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know who's in there for sure, don't you? I mean, I think.
Well, I think Rudy's definitely there. I think Sidney Powell's
Rudy's
definitely
everywhere.
There. And then, I'm hoping for Lindsey Graham. Mm-hmm.
I don't think so,
because evidently, if you remember, there were he made phone calls.
Right.
That, on Trump's behalf. And I think he's smart enough not to go as far as Trump went. But, I don't know.
I would assume. Trump, find me, or can't you find? I think Graham was, I'm trying to remember exactly what Graham said in his call, when that was publicized. I can't remember. I don't think it went as far as Trump did.
I'm still trying to figure out what a South Carolina, senator calling Georgia, what responsibility, what he's got to do in any of that. But that's just...
Well, he was on Trump's, Lindsey. I mean, he and I entered Congress together. He, was anywhere you saw Newt, you saw Lindsey, till Lindsey got tired of Newt. And then Lindsey was one of six votes? I can't remember, because Gingrich called me at the time and said, if six people go against me, I'm not Speaker. And he didn't say it was Lindsey. He said, somebody's leading this. And Graham took, I think, himself and five other people, and the rest was rest was history.
Yeah.
And then Lindsey said all kinds of awful things about Trump when he ran, and then Lindsey became the Trump guy when Trump won.
Yeah, Lindsey swings to
where he would have called that week. He was the Trump guy that week. I can see that one.
That week.
Yeah.
Yeah, he swings whichever way the wind blows, I guess.
Yep.
I can't wait to see what's coming down. I guess I'm going to be up late this evening, but I got to get your thoughts on the big debate. The debates are coming up. What I wanted to ask you about is, is Trump going to show up to the debates? But, again, these indictments popped up. What do you think? Do you think Trump's going to show up?
I originally said he would just because of the ego factor of not being called, chicken. You're afraid.
Yeah.
But I don't know. I'm starting to think he's not going to show up.
I'm advising him, and not that he would take my advice, but I would say under no circumstances does he go into that debate. You mock the debate. You mock it as the kids' table. They got 1%. They're not even close to me. Why would I talk to people that nobody can stand? And I would just, because that's what he's going to do. I think that's what he's going to do. But it's what I would do. Because what's the point of going to the kids' table when you got 50% of the vote?
Right. But you're correct. You're 100% correct. But in the psyche of politics, you look at this. In one of my elections, I'll never forget as long as I live, I had an opponent who, maybe had 7% name ID, right? So they were talking about debates, with me. We were hearing that and that chatter back and forth from their campaign to ours. And so one day I just picked up the phone and I said, I want a debate. I challenged them to a debate. And my campaign manager came in freaking out, something wrong with you. You lost your mind. You don't do this. And I said, I know, but you know what? We had a debate. I did it. I mean, some people like to do that, and some people believe in debates. And I just thought the psyche of Trump, because if I was Chris Christie, I'd say, oh, of course he's afraid.
Yeah.
He's afraid. He's a chicken. We all know he's a chicken deep down. He looks like a fried chicken. I mean, I would go on and on.
He's a coward all day.
Then I think no matter what, no matter your advice and my political advice would be the same, but Trump would enter it. That's why I thought, at the end here, he might jump in. But I don't know. It looks like he's probably not.
No, because here's the thing.
He said he wouldn't take the pledge. So that gives him a legal, legit way out.
Yeah, that gives him the easy way out. But beyond that, I mean, why would you put yourself in a situation where everyone's going to attack you? Where you're the only, you're going to be the focus of all of it, especially when you look at the media coverage that's been going on over the last several months. It's been all about Trump. In fact, I think it was Media Matters who did a study not too long ago that said, Trump's getting like on OAN like 17 times as much as the next challenger of airtime. I think on Newsmax it's three times. On Fox it's 40% more than Ranswamy, who's the next covered. I mean, he's getting all of the attention. I don't know why you would put yourself in that.
Well, because he's Trump. Yeah. I mean,
there's that.
He's not a quote afraid of anything, So he's Trump.
But it's interesting, the debate, the criteria. I would say, look, only you got to get 1% of the vote in three polls. That's it. You got to get the janitor to come. Now the hard part is the 40,000 unique donors with 200 per state and 20 plus states. That's a little bit more difficult to get. But we'll see. We'll see what happens.
I understand, and you do too. Why some of these things are done, and otherwise anybody challenges anybody and is able to go debate, and they had to get some kind of criteria somewhere, to keep that down of having, 58 candidates up on stage.
Yeah. I mean, even if it is just 1% of the vote. Now, evidently Chris Christie hasn't signed the pledge yet. Has he?
I don't believe he has. Nikki Haley signed it. Did she not?
Yeah, but she's going nowhere.
I know, but I think she signed it. Vivek Ramaswamy says he will pardon Trump. So he's already said that.
Evidently, he grabbed the mic at the Iowa State Fair and belted out a Lose Yourself Eminem song, which was, I guess, all the rave.
Well, I'll tell you. Now, on the Democratic side, I'll tell you who she calms me. Williamson. She calms me.
Okay.
Yeah. She really does.
I can see that.
Yoga, meditation. I mean, I really, if she, I don't think, well, I know she's going nowhere for president, but if she had a yoga class or meditation, I would honestly sign up for it.
Yeah, no, she's, I think she's right on a lot of issues.
I don't think she's got a snowball's chance, and you don't want to win,
but I think she's right on a lot of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
If it came down between her or RFK Jr., are you kidding me?
Right, exactly. Well, I saw, what was the controversy today? I did not realize this. His wife is an actress, and somebody that's in films with her wore a blue ball cap, and I love politics and the media today, you know, corporate media, and they had this all over everywhere that this actor had a blue RFK cap on. Was he going against Biden? It was somebody that normally, I think, supports Biden or something. This was like the talk of the town today, and I thought, can we get a life, please?
Yeah, but it's Woody Harrelson.
Yes, that was it.
So, I mean, you know. It's Woody Harrelson.
Well, that might have made the difference of the election. Woody had the wrong cap on.
Yeah, you know, Woody's going to pick the. It's like when he did the Saturday Night Live thing. Understand? Right. You know, Woody did the little you know that made all the anti-vaxxer people just all tingly in the panties. He did the monologue of about COVID. Mm-hmm. So, mm-hmm. Am I surprised to see Woody Harrelson wearing an RFK hat? No, not even a little bit.
Exactly.
Because you know the anti-vax kooks are really, well, they're out there. But here's the great thing.
More people paid attention to that ball cap today than they did the issue of education. So
that's just true too. But here's the thing. The good thing is because of these indictments, we don't have to worry about those gumball virologists anymore explaining why COVID was you know, like Ron Johnson said it was planned by the elites to control us. Because all of the gumball virologists are going away, and they're now going to be Supreme Court justices. You know, they took the Trump University course. I had a listener send me an email who has been lecturing me about the virus, now lecturing me about how Trump's going to beat all the charges, and then you'll see he's coming for you. Very, very strange.
Well, he's not going to necessarily beat them, but I do believe they're going to be delayed. I think for the vast majority of those charges, they're going to be delayed. So after it's going to run up close to the election. You know how the law system works, and then you quote can't interfere with the process of an election, and they get delayed.
Yeah, I think the only one that's got a chance is the last one from Jack Smith because it is fairly narrow. Mm-hmm. The documents cases, you know, that's going to take that could take decades. By the time you have to have a hearing on every classified document, I think.
Yes. Exactly,
but the one the January 6th one, I don't know, that seemed very very narrow and I
just think the way the legal system runs, yeah. And you know, there'll be all these motions, and then there's going to be a certain amount, because he's a former president of the United States, there's going to be a certain amount of material even in the January 6th that all of a sudden becomes a protection issue. Somebody appeals during the trials, to a court, a federal court, you know, the whole nine yards. And that's what I think is going to happen. And so potentially there's nothing decided prior to, a vote.
You listen to the Rick Smith Show here with Bob Nay, former Ohio congressman and political analyst. I got to get your thoughts on the dumbest guy in the U.S. Senate, Tommy Tuberville.
Oh, now, wait a minute. Don't ask me the name, because that's difficult.
Tommy Tuberville, in my view, by far the dumbest guy in the U.S. Senate.
Okay.
But Lloyd Austin is the defense secretary, criticizing him for hurting the country's safety. And I would agree.
Oh, this is absolutely unbelievable. And if you look, and that's what's also interesting, I mean, if you look at the polling on this, it is not selling well with the public. You know, it doesn't sell well with Republicans who want, strong defense. It may sell with some, potential right to life people or something. But in general, this is viewed especially as a gift to China. That's what the article said today. This is a gift, and it's a gift to China. And so the numbers are, by a 58-29% margin, they think that Tuberville has, quote, this is his people in Alabama, has made his point and now needs to drop his hold, 58-29 in his state. So if he, and also 72% of Alabamians said military promotion shouldn't be politicized. So he better take a look at if he thinks he's gaining traction back home, let alone across the country.
Now, the scary part of that is that 29% don't think that it's I mean, that's the part that always amazes me. What are you thinking on these? These should be slam dunks. Saying, should military promotions be political? That across the board should be 100%. People go, no.
I know. It's always people. But now some of that, though.
It's always people. That's my favorite line right there. It's always people.
It's always people. Yeah, some of it, of the 29, I've been able to read the breakdown of the stats. Some of it might be not hardcore 29, but yes, there are still people that, you know, is Osama bin Laden a good guy or not? There's going to be some percentage that's going to say, he wasn't that bad.
Yeah, I'm sure he had good qualities. He was a family somewhere. Man.
Or pray for him, you know, something.
finally, I got to get your thought on this story you sent me yesterday on Marjorie Three Names, campaign manager. Am I getting this right now? I got to get the facts of this. After the train derailment in East Palestine,
yes,
you had this guy, this Isaiah Wortman, who is the campaign manager for Marjorie Three Names. They raised $149,000. Am I getting that right?
Correct. Yes, correct.
So they've been found guilty of fraudulently, you know, doing this, and that they benefited from this Ohio Clean Fund, and they. I got to get the math here, so I need you to help me with this. Because I'm reading through the story, and it says, of the $149,000, they gave $10,000 to the Second Harvest Food Bank of the Mahoning Valley.
Right.
So $10,000 of the $149,000 was actually used for what it was for. So they had to pay restitution of $22,000 each, plus a $3,000 court cost and stuff like that. Now, if I do the math, they each got to pay $22,000 plus $3,000. That's $25,000.
They got to pay $25,000.
Right. So between the two of them, that's $50,000. They spent $10,000 on the actual thing that they were raising money for. What happened to the other $89,000?
Well, they had $25,000. Now the campaign manager Isaiah Wortman. Had to pay $25,000. Yeah, you're making me think about this now. $25,000. They raised $140,000. They gave $10,000, so that's $139,000. They got to pay $22,000 each for restitution, as well as $3,000. So there's the
$50,000 between the two of them.
So that's $60,000.
Right. Where's the other $89,000?
Now they've got to pay a $25,000 civil penalty, also.
Yeah, I didn't see that.
Yeah, they've got to pay a $25,000.
Okay, where's the other $64,000?
The article was written $40,000 because it said that he had to pay, but I think it's both. So I think it was $25,000 more each for a civil penalty.
Okay, where's the $39,000 then?
The other $25,000. So that's $50,000. So we're still missing $10,000, right?
No, we're missing $39,000.
$39,000. Okay, I don't know.
Because my point is it appears, since he's not going to jail, it appears crime pays.
Because I see what you're saying. They might have kept it.
I'm assuming they did keep it because, you know, the story that I read only said they gave $10,000 of the $149,000, and they had to pay restitution each of $22,000 and each $3,000 for investigative cost and fees. And that's it. And because so for me the math there is $60,000. Where's the other $89,000?
Okay, then they did keep some money. You're correct, which they could have used to pay themselves as, you know, working for the nonprofit. I don't normally do this, and I hate to even admit I did this, but on this article I don't normally do this, but I related this one to myself. And again, you know, you do stuff like that if you've had a problem like I did, or anybody else listening to the show has had a problem. Right. You'll drive yourself out of your mind, okay?
Sure.
You know, Bush felt bad for Scooter Libby. Well, he didn't feel bad for me. But, you know, I got past that.
This I don't know
one
how.
Got me. When I you know, had sent that article, this one got me because I'm sitting there going, okay, you know, I had a trip, falsification of the trip document, you know, amounting to maybe $9,000 or $10,000. I'm not even sure to this day because the figures came from Jack. And I read this article and I'm like, you've got to be kidding me. You know, look what they did. Look what scam they did.
Yeah.
You know?
No, this is my problem with,
of all things, you know?
This is my problem with this whole system. It seems some people go to jail and some people walked away with, looks like, 89 grand.
I mean, this one was terrible. Absolutely. You're right. I never thought about that. There is money that they either used or kept or went to dinner. You know how those nonprofits can run. Went to dinner on it, hired people, had a party, whatever. You're right. I'm going to look into that because there are monies they must have kept or used or paid themselves.
Yeah. Right. Look, if you get caught for a crime of this fraudulent, especially for something like this, you should lose. You should be on the massive losing end of this. That's the punishment. The reward shouldn't be going, yeah, we're going to just soil your name a little bit, but you get to keep the money. That's insane. Well,
especially this one, the Ohio Clean Fund, right?
Yeah.
The funds were going to go, Mahoning Valley, for those listening, you know, to the show, it's near East Palestine. The Second Harvest Food Bank was to get the money.
Yeah.
And they got $10,000.
Yeah.
Wow. That's low.
And again, this is another one of those reasons why I never give any money to a lot of these fly-by-night charities, especially ones that just pop up. If I'm donating money, I'm donating it to the Second Harvest Food Bank directly, not through some intermediary. Just rule of thumb, don't get ripped off by con people like this. Right. But as always, Bob, appreciate the time.
Thank you.
Great stuff.
Thank you, Rick.
I hope he does look into it. I hope he does, because I got to know where that other money went. And I'm sure you want to know as well. Okay, take a quick break. Right back to wrap things up. Stick around. Listen to the Rick Smith Show. I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in 2. On this day in labor history, the year was 1980. That was the day 17,000 workers took over the Lenin shipyard in Gdansk, Poland. The Polish economy was struggling, and worker unrest had been on the rise. The government hiked food prices, including doubling the price of meat in July. Then came the tipping point, when a popular shipyard forklift operator, Anna Walentynowicz, was fired. The workers started a sit-down strike, demanding her reinstatement. Instead of marching through the city, they decided to occupy the shipyard. The reasoning was the military would be less likely to engage the workers and risk damaging the yards. The workers also protested the rising food prices and demanded the right to unionize. The action was led by Lech Walesa, a former shipyard electrician. Walesa himself had been fired 4 years before for union activity. News of the occupation spread along the Baltic coast. 400,000 workers joined the cause. The workers established an interfactory committee to negotiate with Communist Party leaders. They drafted a list of 21 demands. The list included recognition of independent trade unions, the right to strike, maternity leave, and improved medical care. Officials from the Communist Party agreed to most of the workers' demands. On the last day of August, the workers voted to form one national trade union. They named the union Solidarity. Solidarity became the center of a Polish reform movement, and 10 million people joined. A year later, the communist Polish government reversed course and outlawed the organization. They jailed 6,000 of its leaders, including Walesa. But the movement did not die. It went underground and continued to organize. In 1989, Walesa was elected president of Poland in a free election. Back to the Rick Smith Show. Check out our website, thericksmithshow.com, because we're going to finish today up with an email from Lewis. Lewis said, I just wanted to say, Rick, that in addition to destroying public schools in this country, those with the big bucks funding this madness also want to exacerbate the vast inequality we now have in our society. We know the public schools for the poor are in much need of help and support. But what these crazies who are on the frontline soldiers are doing is contributing to the marginalization of their own kids. He says, we must remember that not all of these quote-unquote concerned parents are wealthy or have their children in affluent public schools. Some of them are, some of these people are regular citizens, middle and working class, who are in essence destroying opportunities for their own children. It's diabolically and sinisterly brilliant. It's time for the masses to wake up and stop with the red hat, blue hat, and work together to put an end to our oppression. That's all I have to say, so I'll get off my soapbox. Well, it's a good soapbox. It's the right soapbox. You know, you look at this, and if we destroy the one opportunity that the vast majority of kids get to get an education, it's going to go back to the way it was in the way back time, where those who had the money to be able to send their kids to school were able to do that, or you got some churching. And then what you got was very narrow, very repressive, ideological, whatever words you want to throw in there. But we'll stick with narrow. And that is not good for democracy. Because we do need critical, critical thinking, informed, active, engaged citizens if we're going to continue this wonderful experiment of self-governance. I got to tell you, I don't think the wealthy in this country believe that we're capable of it. But I think we are. I think we're capable to come together and take off the red hat or the blue hat and get back to work. I want to hear your thoughts. And Lewis, thanks for the email. You can email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. I do answer all emails personally. Thanks so much for tuning in. We will see you back here next time.
You've been listening to The Rick Smith Show. Email Rick. Rick@thericksmithshow.com. Until next time, this has been The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
How would you like to look 5 years younger? In a clinical study, people that had volume added with Juvederm Voluma XC in the cheeks perceived themselves as looking 5 years younger at 6 months after treatment. Look younger, feel like you. Add volume for lift and contour in the cheeks with Juvederm Voluma XC. Reverse signs of aging by adding volume to smooth laugh lines with Juvederm Volure XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply. When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.